The week's address commences with an elaborate discussion of Avram's loyalty to the Midos Chesed immediately following the Bris
Milah.
And the Torah narrates in a detailed manner everything that Avram did on the third day of his circumcision. How Avram ran toward the cattle, how he prepared the cattle and the butter and the milk, and how he urged Pharaoh to be quick in the preparation of the meal for the three men that passed by his tent. Undoubtedly, Avram has been just as loyal to the Midah of Chesed on every other day of his life. Still, the Torah does not narrate in a detailed manner Avram's activities of Chesed. Only in a general way, the Torah tells in this week's Seder that Avram was dedicated to the midos of Tzokol Mishpat. But as to Avram's dedication to Chesed on the third day of his circumcision, the Torah takes such a great interest that it considers it important to tell every detail. Why is this so? The answer is that Avram's loyalty to Chesed immediately following his circumcision has a bearing upon the mitzvah of Brit Milah and also upon the concept of Atah B'Chatanu, as it is represented by the covenant of Milah. Now, the circumcision of Avram marked the conversion of Avram into Yadus. Until the circumcision of Avram, there was no such thing as a Jew. Avram himself was not halachically a Jew until he became circumcised according to the mandate of God. This circumcision marked a segregation of Jewry from the rest of mankind. Still, we find that the Torah conferred the name of Avram concurrently with the Bris Milah. Now, the change in name from Avram to Avraham implies the concept of universalism. Avraham means that he was an Av Hamon Golim, a father of multitudes of people. At first blush, it appears that the conversion of Avram and the fulfillment of the Bris Milah represented a contraction, a symptom, rather than an expansion. But this is only because people are not inclined to take cognizance of the fundamental distinction that there is between the general concept of universalism as it prevails among all the nations and the unique concept of universalism as it is conceived among the Jews. In order to understand this, we have to consider the mitzvah of Brit Milah. The mitzvah of Brit Milah, halachically, consists of two aspects, or two kiyumim. First, there is the requirement of krisas ha'olah, of removing the foreskin. Then, there is also the aspect, the kiyum, of atofas damris. And these two aspects constitute two separate kiyumi. You have all heard of an instrument that is employed by Samuel Halley, commonly known as gomka klemp. Now, what is wrong halachically with gomka klemp? Insofar as the mitzvah, the requirement of removing the olah is concerned, the gomka klemp is as good as any other instrument that was ever used by Miyal. But when one uses the gomka klemp, so there is no bleeding at the time that the olah is removed. There is a substantial bleeding before the removal of the olah. And after the removal of the olah, there is also slight bleeding. But at the time, concurrently with the removal of the foreskin, there is no bleeding. This is what disqualifies the gomka klemp as an instrument in Milah. Because when a lawyer uses the gomka klemp, he fulfills the mitzvah of Milah, but he does not fulfill the other kiyum mitzvah, the aspect of atofas damris, because there is no bleeding concurrently with the removal of the foreskin. Now, the removal of the foreskin represents the concept that the world as well as men was created by God in an imperfect form. And this is exactly the reason as to why every man must flunk. Because God created the world and man in an imperfect form. Now, we have a mitzvah in the Torah. Umaltem esolach levachem. What does it mean? We shall remove the olah, the foreskin of our heart. That doesn't mean that every Jew is to submit to a heart operation. But olah means something that is imperfect, that's all. Now, the foreskin and the organ is an imperfection. According to the Rambam in Meir Nivuchim, circumcision has the effect of reducing the lost potential in a male. And this observation has been confirmed by modern scientists. Now, we all know now that as a result of circumcision, the development of a certain kind of cancer is prevented. That means that the olah is a source of a certain kind of cancer. In other words, the olah represents an imperfection. God created men with an olah. Why did God create man with an olah? Because God did not want man to be created perfect. Then there wouldn't be any purpose in creation. God wanted man to become a partner with him in the upbuilding of the world, as I mentioned so many times. Now, the olah itself represents a moral imperfection, as the Rambam explains it. It represents a physical imperfection, and by removing the olah will thereby improve upon the creation of God, upon the human organism. Just as man has a physical olah, just as there are certain destructive forces, physically destructive, in healing the man and in the world, so also and even more so, They are moral destructive forces raging within men. Men comes into the world with certain instincts, like any other animal. But that doesn't mean that man is basically evil. These instincts are the source of all evil. But at the same time, man is in a position to sublimate the instincts and to perfect them so that the same instincts, which without sublimation will be the source of all evil, will, through sublimation, through dedication to the commandments of the Torah, become a source of all good. And this is the mitzvah of Umalken Solas Levachan. The Rambam says in the Sefer HaMitzvos that this mitzvah is not to be included in the Minyan Tayag because of the fact that it includes in its scope all of the mitzvahs of the Torah. Because the mitzvah of Malkem Esolach Levachem implies that a man should strive to be perfect, to remove the imperfect foreskin that covers the heart of man, that blocks all the sublime emotions that inhere in man. In order to realize that goal, one must first fulfill all the commandments of the Torah. And therefore, it is not to be counted in the Minyan Tayag, because this is one of the qualim of the Rambam, that Rorin Hatil and Eskola Tehil Kulo are not to be included in the Minyan Tayag. This is the first aspect of Mira, brief Mira, namely that man is to counteract the imperfection and the destructive forces that rage within the world. But then the question arises, how can a Jew counteract all these destructive and chaotic forces? So the answer to this question is given by the second aspect, the aspect of Hatofas Dam Bris. Now, logically, this, as I mentioned, if this is a separate and independent kingdom, for example, if a Tinnik is Milad Mol, or a Gershon is Gaia Kishu Mol, you can't remove the foreskin, you have to be Matis Dambris. What does the aspect of Atofas Dambris represent? Now, obviously, as it is mentioned in the psukim that are recited at the Bris Milah, and as it is mentioned in the brocha that is recited over Milas Geirin, it's not recited in the Broche or Milas Tinok, Sheyilmolei Atofas Dambris lo yiskayim lo shomayim voretz, and as we say in the Pesukim, Voezer olayich ve'erich misbeseses bidomayich, ve'im aloch bidomayich hayi, ve'im aloch bidomayich hayi. That Atofas Dambris represents the concept of sacrifice. Blood. The child must bleed during circumcision. Now, I mentioned in the Ashkofis Yehanurach that the consideration for the promise of the Almighty towards Noach as the representative of all of mankind was the suffering of man. Suffering of man is an integral part of life. Before the Mabul, there was no suffering. Man was able to live in a home that had all the four walls, as I mentioned. But this led to a degeneration of men, because men didn't suffer, because every man was able to live for 600 and 700 years together with his parents and grandparents, with his spouse and his children and grandchildren. But then, in order to guarantee the survival of mankind, God in his infinite wisdom realized that there must be suffering as an integral part of life. That will prevent the total degeneration of men. Everyone must suffer. There isn't a person whose tent, whose home has all the four walls. One wall must be missing. This is what God showed Eve in a perfect vision, a sickle with three wolves. So suffering is an element in the covenant that God established with all of mankind. But there is a distinction between the destiny of mankind in its entirety and the destiny of Jew as a unique nation. True, that suffering is an integral part in every man's life, regardless of origin and creed. But in the suffering of man, as a human being, there is no commitment coupled with suffering. Every man suffers. A pagan also suffers. But there is no commitment coupled with that suffering. However, in the destiny of the Jewish people, it is not enough that the Jew should suffer. But the Jew is to couple his suffering with commitment. This is what the Pasuk of Ve'ever Olayich Ve'erich Mizdeseset Bidamayich Ve'imelach Bidamayich Hayim Ve'imelach Bidamayich Hayim implies. Now every Jew suffered. And when Hitler ordered that Jews be pushed into the gas chambers, so every Jew, regardless whether he was religious or irreligious, whether he was a saint or an atheist, was pushed in the gas chambers. But the sacrifice of all Jews was not the same. There's a difference between the sacrifice of a Jew who offers a sacrifice not with his own will and the Jew who commits himself to a certain goal. The Jew who lives in accordance with the mandates of the Torah, he offers a sacrifice at will. He bleeds because in order to live as a Jew, one must bleed. There is commitment on his part. The communist, who was also, who suffered the same fate as the Hasid, he also offered the same sacrifice, but without any commitment on his part. Now, two brisos were established by God with Avram. One bris was the bris bin Aksol. The other bris was the bris Nero. The Brisbane, the consideration for the Brisbane Absolim was suffering. In addition to the suffering that every man undergoes, a Jew must undergo additional suffering, even if he's an atheist, even if he doesn't believe, even if he challenges and defies the Almighty. He still has to suffer as a Jew. This is the suffering that is implicit in the Brisbane Absolim. Symbolized by the San Roshon and the Lapid Eish Asherovar bin Akzori Moele. And a Jew cannot escape from the destiny of the Jewish people. No matter what he does, he'll always remain a Jew. But the suffering implicit in the Brit Milah is a suffering coupled with commitment. That suffering is not realized by every Jew, but only by those Jews who are dedicated to God. This is the reason as to why the Torah says, in connection with the Brit Milah, "Vakimaseh brisi beni levinecho uvinzaracha achecho ederesom brisimam minis lechol elohim uzaracha achecho ונתתי לכל זרח ואחריך יש ארץ מדרך יש כל ארץ כנען להכריז אפילום ואייסי להם ללכים. The promise included in the brief law is a promise of a bilateral contract. You know, there's a bilateral contract and there is a unilateral contract. Bilateral contract implies that every party to the contract must do something. A unilateral contract means that one party promises to do something in return for a certain consideration. But the other party does not have to do anything. The consideration is there. The consideration that brings them up soaring is a consideration of a unilateral contract. the fulfillment of the promise made in the Brisbane Aksoyim of Nezarachon Asatius Oles Aziz in our Mitzrayim Adanor Agodim Ha'apos, that will be realized regardless of the demeanor of the Jews. Whether the Jews will deport themselves in accordance with the Torah, or Jews will make demonstrations against the sanctity of Shabbat. But this promise will be realized anyway, because of the consideration, of the universal contract consideration, the suffering. And that consideration has been given by the Jews, by all Jews, by Orthodox Jews, by atheistic Jews, all kinds of Jews it has been given. And for that reason, God is obligated to comply with his part of the contract. But the other obligations, we stem not from the promise made in the Brit Hamilah, but from the promise made in the Brit Milah of our Yisro Henry the King. That promise will only be fulfilled if the Jews realize and fulfill their part of the contract. The contract of suffering with commitment, not suffering without commitment. And this establishes the unique identity of the Jewish people, in that Jews, when they suffer with commitment. Non-Jews, when they suffer without commitment. Now, the Brit Milah, which marks the sign, the earmark of a Jew, and this is the test whereby we determine and we distinguish a Jew from a non-Jew. That's the halacha. If a non-Jew wants to become converted, so he must undergo a process of milah. Why? Because the distinguishing feature of a Jew is suffering with commitment. That's one. That's the aspect of Hatzofas Dam Brit. And the other distinguishing feature of a Jew is a dedication towards an improvement of the imperfection that inheres in the world. A Jew is dedicated to these two concepts. First, that the world is imperfect. There is an Allah. There is an Allah's Basar, and there is an Allah's Alev, and there is an Allah's Alam. There are certain chaotic forces that rage within the universe, physical and biological and moral forces. And man is in a position to perfect and to counteract these forces. And then a Jew is dedicated to the idea of suffering with commitment. So it is true that the Brit Milah represented a contraction, a symptom. It marked the beginning of Jewish nationalism, if you want to call it that way. It marked the first segregation in mankind, but a segregation of a different kind, a spiritual segregation. When Avram became a Jew, when Avram became circumcised, so then the chosen people commenced. But it's the concept of a chosen people based upon a goal and tasks and burdens rather than upon privileges. This is what distinguishes the Jewish nationalism from the nationalism prevailing in other nations. The Jewish nationalism, as symbolized by the Brit Milah, is one that is based upon a dedication to all of mankind. And this is the reason as to why, concurrently with the Brit Milah, Avram acquired a new name instead of Avram, which has a local significance. So the name of Avram, with universal implication, was conferred upon him. Because the Jews are to serve as the nucleus within the mankind, which is to preserve all of mankind. Without a nucleus which will be dedicated to the concept of suffering with commitment, mankind in its entirety cannot survive. It is for this reason that the Torah commences this week's Sedra with an elaborate discussion of the loyalty of Chesed, of the loyalty of Avram towards the leader of Chesed. It is true Avram had been loyal to the leader of Chesed throughout the days of his life, but the Torah does not find it necessary to discuss in detail everything that Avram did in pursuance of this dedication. But it is necessary for the Torah to tell in detail every apparent insignificant vicissitude in Avram's behavior and the days following the circumcision. Because this behavior of Avram shows that the spiritual segregation of the Jewish people as marked by the Bris Milah was one that was coupled with dedication towards all of mankind. Now what did Avram do on the third day of circumcision, when the pain of the Milah is most acute? As Rashi explains, he decided to sit outside in the heat of the sun. Even though he knew that this will only aggravate the pain, so that he will be able to manifest generosity and hospitality towards strangers. And to whom did Avram try to manifest generosity? Avram, in his remotest fantasy, could not conceive of angels appearing in human form. But he thought that pagan Arabs were passing by on the road. And Avram ran toward these apparently pagan Arabs who worshipped the dust of the earth, and he pleaded with them so that they should enter his house and that they should participate in a meal. And Avram, even though he was occupied with a dialogue with Hashem, so he begged Hashem to forgive him so that he could devote himself toward hospitality towards whom? Hospitality toward Jews who embraced the new faith? No, hospitality, chesed, towards pagans who worshipped the dust of the earth. Now, this obviously indicates that the teaching of the Torah, or Jewish nationalism, is one that goes hand in hand with the most sublime ideals of universalism. Now then, after a discussion of Avram's chesed towards pagans, the Torah proceeds with a discussion, with a narration of Avram's concept of justice. Now, Avram's behavior towards those who appear to be pagans manifested the need of chesed. But Avram's remonstrance with God, when Avram pleaded with God that if he can find 50 tzaddikim, 40 tzaddikim, 30 tzaddikim, 20 tzaddikim, 10 tzaddikim is done, that he should pay all of them, stemmed not from Avram's sense of chesed, but from Avram's sense of mishpat. Now, Avram did not say to God, Cholino lecho ma'aseis kadovo hazeh, Hayin alikei kol ha'oretz lo yaseh chesed. He didn't say that. But he said, Cholino lecho ma'aseis kadovo hazeh lihom istadik im rosho, vihoyo chasadik al rosho, Cholino lo chasheifit kol ha'oretz lo yaseh mishpot. He was pleading for justice, for righteousness. Why couldn't he base his plea on the grounds of chesed? it would have been a much easier case for Avram to base his plea upon grounds of chesed, because chesed is based upon excessive thing of generosity. Generosity towards everybody, towards the wicked as well as towards the saints. Apparently, Avram, in respect to the Ancient Dome, could not resort to chesed. But he had to resort to mishpat, to justice, to righteousness, not to chesed. Why not? The answer is that chesed cannot be applied towards everybody. There are certain people against whom chesed cannot be applied. Can you apply chesed against the Nazis? An application of chesed towards the Nazis would constitute the most brutal form of injustice that one can conceive. Kol hamrachim, kol mishenate rachmon, al ha'arzon, hareyu arzo al ha'rachmoni. So, Avram could not come forward with the plea of chesed that God should manifest chesed toward the Ancient Dome. Because if God said that Zakat Dengra Meiro Kirobo Vichatotam Kichob Dome Eid, that means we don't deserve any chesed. Chesed is based upon the concept of brotherly love. If a person is completely wicked, like the Nazis, there can't be any chesed towards them. How can there be brotherly love towards those who are completely wicked? Kichob dome eid! But Avram, who was so motivated by chesed, was able to conceive of a mishpat that was also colored by chesed. And on the basis of that mishpat, he could remonstrate with the Almighty on behalf of the Anshito. Now, I mentioned last year that Mishpat and Tzedek stem from the concept of the Tzelem Elokim Boro Yisodom, from the fact that man was created in the image of God. Hence, man is endowed with certain inalienable rights. Chesed, however, does not stem from the concept of Bitzalem Elokim or Sodom. It stems from love, from the concept of brotherly love. So in order that a person should be required to realize chesed towards another person, that other person must be, in a certain sense and to a certain extent, a brother of it. If he's not a brother of it, then you cannot conceive of chesed. Now, the question arises, if chesed is based upon the concept of brother love, then chesed should be realized only to those who are brothers. It could not be realized towards those who are completely wicked. Because if they are completely wicked, as the Anshish Dein law in the judgment of the Almighty, so then they couldn't be brothers with Avram. There couldn't be any chesed. He had to resort to mishpat. But in respect to those whom Avram considered as pagans, as idol worshippers who bow to the dust of the earth, he did manifest chesed. That means that Avram considered the pagan Arabs as brothers. Are they to be considered as brothers? From the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, it appears. Is this the right time?
No. 11:35.
11:35. All right, fine. So I have the right time. So,
from convincing Pirkeorins, it appears that only Jews are brothers. Because the Mishnah says, Hovi v'odom shenivro b'tzalem alakim. Chidu yisiron da'atle, shenivro b'tzalem alakim. Then, chidu yisroel shenikroim bonim lamokim. Chidu yisiron da'atle, shenikriu bonim lamokim. So, the first half of the Mishnah speaks in general terms, Hovi v'odom. And the Tesis Yontif says that the right gear said are two gears, Odom, Hovi v'odom, Hovi v'odom. So he makes the comment that the right gear say is Hovi v'odom. Because Avraham makes a distinction between Odom and Hodom. Odom relates only to Yisrael, Atim Kroim Odom, the Unisalem Kroim Odom. But Hodom has reference to all of men. Ashayasa is Odom the Chaybem, Ashayasa is Kanim Levin the Yisrael in Reynamar, Ashayasa is Odom, Mikan Shafi Nochi Vesit Batiro Areu Kikin Gode. So Avraham makes that distinction. Now here the Torah, the Mishnah says Chaviv Odom, Shemivu Tzal Elokim, and that is true of every man. So the right verse is Chaviv Odom. But then, the next part of the Mishnah states, Chvim Yisroel Shemikroim Bonim Amokim, Shemema Bonim Atem Ladishem Alekich. So that implies that only Jews are Bonim Amokim. And, as the Pasuk says, Bonim Atem, Atem means you. Who? The term you has reference to Jews. Non-Jews are not bonim. Now, if they are not bonim, so then it follows that non-Jews are not brothers of Jews. Because the concept of brotherhood of men, according to the Torah, is not a biological concept. Because, first of all, biologically, so we could only be, all men could only be cousins, not brothers. They all descend from Adam and Chavo. And then, the halacha is that a gay or tzedek is considered a brother as much as a Jew who descends from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. What is the bond between the tzedek and the Jew who descends from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? It's not a biological bond, it's a spiritual bond. So, the concept of brotherhood is not a biological concept, it is based upon a spiritual bond. What spiritual bond? So the Rambam in Hilchot Matanis Aninim says that the brotherhood existing between one Jew and another is based upon the fact that all Jews are children of God. He says, the Rambam says in the Yud Milchet, Matnas Aniyim, Aloha Bey, Re'uom, Uno Domani Min Azdoko, Vi Dovo Ra, Velo Hezik, Nikla Al Bishul Azdoko, Shenema Avo Iso, Vo Yom Aisa Azdoko Shalem, Kolam Rachim Rachim Olof, Shenema Venosum Rachim Zerach Necho Vi Yabecho, Vichol Mishu Arzori Vi Im Rachim Vi Shlochu Shul Yichsoy, Shena Arzori Et Mitzuyo Ole Bakum, Shenema Arzori Vi Imo Velo Yirachamu, Vichol Yisroel, Varnil Zalem, Arnil Zalem means, Again, Kiachim Heim, They're all brothers, why? שנאמר בוני מתם לה בשם הלכיכם ואם לא ירחם אורך על אורך מי ירחם עליו? So the brotherhood of men is based on the fact that they are children of God. בוני מתם לה בשם הלכיכם. Now what is a brother? Who do you call brother? Brothers you call those individuals who have the same parents. That's a brother. Now all Jews are brothers, not because they all descend from Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. That would make them only cousins, not brothers. But because Bonim Atem Ladishem Alekichem, so they all have one father, God. Now what does it mean, God is a father? How can God have children? The answer is that father in the Torah means a teacher. Vishinamtam Livonecho Eli Talmidecho. A disciple, a pupil, is a child. Therefore, a teacher, a rabbi, is a father. Bonim Atem Ladishem Alekichem, because Jews are required to follow the path of God and to emulate God. This is the basics of Jewish morality, the Lachta Bidrov, the emulation of God. In other words, Talmidim of God. That makes them children of God. If all Jews are children of God, Talmidim of God, They have one parent, they have one father. So, that makes them all into brothers. So the concept of brotherhood is based upon the fact that they are children of God. Now, if Jews are to be considered as the children of God, but not non-Jews, so then they're not brothers. And this is how it appears from the pasuk of Bani Matim Adishem Arakechem. However, there is another pasuk in the Torah from which it appears that the members of other nations are also children of God. And I'm referring to a pasuk in Shmos. Arkel Kari, Kiyomar Adishem, B'nei Chayla Yisrael, Reina Recho, Shalach Ezdi Yardenu. Yisrael is my oldest son. If Yisrael is my oldest son, so that implies that the other nations are the other sons of God. B'nei Poyri Yisrael, B'nei Poyri, my oldest son. If Yisrael is the oldest son of the Almighty, so that implies that the other nations are also children of God, except that Yisrael is the oldest one. So, why does the Mishnah say, Chvilim Yisrael shenikoyim bonim lamokim, and why does the Torah itself say, bonim atem l'adishem l'kechem, why atem? Every man is a child of God. So it seems to me that the answer to this apparent contradiction is contained in the few words mentioned by Rabbi Nevatia Sforna, and this pasuk, and this expression of Bnei Priya Yisrael. Now, Rabbi Nevatia Sforna's pirush is a remarkable commentary. He is very concise, very brief, but in the few words that he mentions are contained multitudes of thoughts throughout his pirush. I heard from Rabbi Chaim Meller, Zichron Livracha, that Rabbi Nevatia Sforna's pirush on the Torah is the most profound pirush that there is on the Torah. Now, but in order to understand what Rabbi Nevatia Sforna means, you can look it up, but he only mentions a few words. In order to understand those few words, we have to take cognizance of a pasuk in this week's Seder in connection with Hagar and Ishmael. When Avram was forced by God to heed King Hagar's advice, to Sarah's advice, and to send away Ishmael, so the Torah tells us that Hagar, as she was wandering in the desert, and as the water of the bottle was used up, so she cast away the child, Ishmael, beneath one of the bushes. And she sat at a certain distance, at a distance of a bow shot from the child. Ki omro aleret bimei sayolet, vateishet vineged vatiso eskelo vateif. She didn't want to hear the crying of the child. And then God heard the Kalana, but Ishmael came at Kalana. Vayikro malach alakim el hogo min ha-shamayim. Vayimelo malach hogo al-tiri kishom alakim el Kalana ba-asher hu-shom. Ba-asher hu-shom. The expression ba-asher hu-shom seems to be superfluous. So Chazal say that the angels remonstrated with God. And they said, how can you provide this lad with water? You know that the descendants, the children of this lad, will slay your children, means the Israelites, with thirst. So why should you save this lad? So the Almighty asked the angels, Achshavu tzadikul rosho. Now at this moment, is he a righteous person or a wicked person? The angels had to give the answer, Achshavu tzadik. At this moment, he's righteous, Ishmael! He was a Parodom, all right, but he was still righteous. Parodom doesn't mean barbarian. Parodom means, as Rabshimshon for years points out, because actually the Torah should have said Odom Pere, because the noun always comes first and then the adjective. Why Parodom? Why Pere first and then Odom? So Rabshimshon for her says that Parodom doesn't mean a wild person. Parodom means the primitivity of men. Yishmael did not strive to become more and more civilized. Yishmael believed that Gandhi did, that the less he becomes civilized, the better off he is. He represented the primitivity of men. Per Odom. But he was righteous at that moment. So, this is the criterion whereby the Almighty judges men. Ba'asha Rishon. By what a person is now. He doesn't consider the future. The future deeds of the person. He doesn't consider the future deeds of the descendants of the person. And for this reason, the Almighty could not dispossess the Kna'ani until the wickedness and the cruelty was so great that it had to be wiped out. But the Almighty knew that in the long run, they will sink so low that they will have to be wiped out, but until this measure of wickedness was attained by the Kna'ani, so the Almighty could not dispossess them. Yes? In 1 second. Well, Mesir Omer, too, Al Shim Sofer, but even now when he's being punished, he's already delinquent, except that the delinquency is not of such a degree that this in itself should be mechayev Musa. But you cannot take an innocent person and punish him just because of the future, of what he's going to do.
He's done the same thing with the Kna'an, and they were also called him already.
Called him, but not so much. Well, then, you see, in the Seir HaMeir, Chazal say that Rehoyov Lohasipuyes, because the Torah encompassed, you see, the law of Ben Seir HaMeir with so many requirements that practically it would be impossible for Ben Seir HaMeir to be executed, you see. Now, because one of the requirements is, according to one Tanakh, that it should be the same voice and the same appearance, and of course, according to everyone, so the father and the mother have to demand that there's the punishment. If one of the parents doesn't demand, then cannot be punished. And you can understand yourself that if the father and the mother both demand that he be put to death, then he must be so delinquent that there is no hope for him. Now, 1 second. Now, so that's the criterion whereby the Almighty punishes a person. Ba'asher Husham. And the Almighty will never condemn a person on a prospective basis, only on the basis of the present, not on a prospective basis. Now, Rabbi Melvadia Sforna says that the meaning of B'chir Yisrael is Israel is designated as the oldest son. Why is the oldest son? Because there will come a time when all of men will acknowledge the sovereignty of God. As the Novi says, Novi Tzvani says, "Kos efich has kol anim sofa bruro, v'kri kulam b'shem ha'deshem ulov di b'shchen erot." Now, at that time, so everybody will be, the members of all the nations will be pupils of God. They'll all be dedicated to the concept of Allah to be taught. They'll all be following the path of God. They'll all acknowledge the sovereignty of God. They'll all be children of God, talmidim of God. Then they'll all be children of God. But even then, even when this wonderful time will arrive, of course, but Israel will still be distinguished from all the other nations. Because Israel will be the pioneer. He'll be the oldest son. He'll be the one son of God that paved the way for all the nations of the world. So, Israel is designated as Yisrael, as the pioneering son. But,
there'll come a time when all the nations of the world will be children of God. So it seems that there is a distinction between the Nidotevo of God and the Nidopuronius of God. In respect to Puronios, so the criterion whereby Hashem judges a person is Basher Hishom, on the basis of the present, not on the basis of the future. Even if God in his infinite wisdom knows that a certain man or the descendants of a certain man will be very wicked, will not have a vestige of goodness in them, but God is not going to condemn and to punish a person on the basis of what he will do, or on the basis of what his descendants will do. It must be on the basis of the present. But in respect to the Nidotoiho, to rewards, then God will take in consideration not only the past and the present, but even the future. And this is one of the Nidai Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Erech HaPayim. Hashem HaVishem Ki Rachum V'Chanun. Erech HaPayim. What does Erech HaPayim mean? Erech HaPayim means long-suffering, tolerant. That's what Erech HaPayim means, tolerant. But literally, Erech HaPayim means what? Erech HaPayim means patient. Patient, long-suffering. In other words, God is patient. He's patient. In other words, if there is hope for men, God will tolerate men. But if there is no hope for men, God will not tolerate men. Why did God destroy mankind through the Marvel? Because God in his infinite wisdom took notice of the fact that there is no hope for this mankind, as I pointed it out. So he can't be tolerated. Then mankind must be wiped out. But after the Marvel, God took a note that never again will he destroy mankind in its entirety. Why? Because God took notice of the fact that there is hope for men. That men will ultimately, in spite of all his stumblings, reach his goal. So, in respect to Nidotevo, to reward, God takes in consideration the future as much as he takes the present into consideration. God does not condemn him on the basis of the future, but God credits men on the basis of the future. So this is why the Torah designates Israel as the oldest son, at the same time implying that all the nations, the members of the other nations, are also children of God. In what sense? In the sense of the future. Because of Mashiach's race, because of the unavoidable fulfillment of this prophetic vision of Kiroz Efiches Kol Ha'amim Sofo Bruo Likvichulom Dishem Adishem Ulov Dishchamechot. So all the nations of the world are children of God. So from the point of view of the future perfect, you know, there is a future and there is a future perfect. Future perfect means, for example, if I say by noon I will have finished this year. Seems so, is it? So that's future perfect. That's future perfect. So that means God takes into consideration the future perfect. Because there will be a time when men will have been the children of God. So from that point of view, they can be treated as children of God. If they can be treated as children of God from that point of view, so from that point of view, they can also be treated as brothers of the Jews. Because the concept of brotherhood is based upon the concept of the fatherhood of God. As the Roman says, Kol Yisroelach, Jews are full brothers. Why? Because Jews are children of God on the basis of the present. Non-Jews are not children of God on the basis of the present. Far from it. But on the basis of the future, they are children of God. So they are partial brothers of the Jews. To a certain extent, they are brothers. Now, whenever the Torah mentions the term Ochicho, so Enochi is excluded. Not only in Akum, Akum means a pagan. Even one who observes Zionism is also excluded. But when the Torah mentions Reyenu, Rabbi Bechaya says in his Perush, then it has reference to non-Jews as well. Except if there is a special passage
which is superfluous, which was intended to exclude it out. For example, ki yitanish al reinu. So the reinu is superfluous. Why did the Torah ki yitanish? Elachot. Ki kesef ukelim. Why did the Torah say al reinu? So, it is superfluous, so we exclude that. But if the reinu is not superfluous, so then the reinu includes a nochi as well. Then the Rabbi Bechai, your father Rabbi Bechai says it in his Pirush, on the Pasuk of Lisana Derach Oichoka, that it has reference to Inandi as well. However, Rabbi Bechai points out, if the Torah says Ochicho, so then a nochi is excluded. Because a Inandi is not a brother. Because the brotherhood is not a biological concept, it is a spiritual concept. What does Achicho mean? Achicho b'teiro v'mitzvot. Is there that spiritual bond of being children of God, pupils of God, in Nochri, on the basis of the present, is not a child of God? He does not follow the path of God. He doesn't even know what the path of God is. So, he's excluded from the term Achicho. This is what Rabbi Bechai says. Still, we find in Medrash Rabo, the Medrash Rabo says, in respect to the Pasuk, Ki Seishiv Be'ochicho, Ki Sidavia Be'ochicho, Titen Deifi Bidenu Masecho. That's the Pasuk, I might have made a mistake in one way. Be'ochicho Seishiv Sidavia Be'ochicho, Bidenu Masecho, Titen Deifi. The Medrash says, אם אתה מדבר בגנוסי של אחיכו שאינו ישראל, לסייב שאתה מדבר בגנוסי של אחיכו שהוא ישראל. In other words, so the אחיכו has reference to one who is not Jewish. If someone talks Lashon Hara against the non-Jew, one is not allowed to talk Lashon Hara even against non-Jew, so we'll end up with talking Lashon Hara against the Jew. So we thus see that the term אחיכו has reference to a non-Jew as well. Well, the answer is, it all depends how the term Ochicho is used. Whether it is used Ochicho in the sense of being a brother on the basis of the present, whenever the Torah uses the term Ochicho, then it means one who is an Ach, who is a child of God on the basis of the present, not on the basis of the future perfect. So, Enochi is excluded. This is a clause in reference to the term Ochicho that is used in the Torah, Chamisha Chumshiteo. But in Mivin, Ochicho can be used in reference to someone who is a brother on the basis of the future perfect. And then, as the Torah itself says, so all the nations are children of God. So, now, in respect to Mishpat, I have to finish now, in respect to Mishpat, the Torah does not make any distinction between a Jew and a non-Jew. Insofar as rights of a person are concerned, so there is no distinction between a Jew and a non-Jew. But the Torah doesn't make a distinction between a Jew and a non-Jew in respect to brotherly love. For example, the mitzvah of Asra Racha Kamecha applies to a Jew, not to a non-Jew. That doesn't mean that one is not required to love one who is not Jewish. Rabbi Chaim Vital says in Sefer, in the Shah Ha'Gisho, the Ulichuyev Yisrael lei v'skol adrios afilu et agoy, and he finds it in the expression of avat adrios. He doesn't say avat Yisrael, he says avat adrios. But true that one is mechuyev to love every man afilu et agoy, but what the Torah does not require a Jew to love a non-Jew as much as he loves himself. That degree of love, of loving the person as much as he loves himself, is reserved only for Jews. And to require a Jew to love a non-Jew as much as he loves himself would run counter to human nature. It would be to hypocrisy. This is what is wrong with the non-Jewish faith. They preach love towards everybody, even towards the enemy. So what did it give rise to? It gave rise to bloodshed. A person cannot love every person as the way he loves himself. It's impossible. There must be a certain bond between individuals so that he could love another individual as much as he loves himself. But there could be some love towards everyone. So the mitzvah of Asra Racha Kamecha That has to be realized. Only respect the Jews. Why? Only the good bond of brotherhood. Of brotherhood on the basis of the present. So then there can be the degree of brotherly love, of loving one loves himself. But members of other nations, so we have to love. Chesed has to be realized, but not to the same extent as Chesed has to be realized towards the Jew. Now, Avraham manifested Chesed towards those whom he considered as pagans, non-Jews, because these individuals, on the basis of the future perfect, could be treated as his brothers, on the basis of the future perfect. But in respect to the Anshin's name, God said to him, Zachar Zeva Nero Kirobo Lachatotem Kichol Demeit. Now God is Melech HaPayim. God wouldn't decide to destroy Zeva Nero if there is any hope for them. So that means that even on the basis of the future perfect, they cannot be considered as brothers. Even on the basis of the future perfect, they cannot be considered as children of God, and consequently as brothers of Avraham. Then you cannot resort to the Midah of Chesed, because the Midah of Chesed stems from love. From love. Love is based upon the concept of brotherhood of men. There is brotherhood of men. Between no men, even between Jews and non-Jews. But only on the basis of the future perfect. Only there is a hope that in the end the law acknowledges the sovereignty of God. But as to the Anshis Deva Meo, he could not resort to Chesed. There couldn't be any brotherhood. But he had to resort to Mishpat.